Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. Why not respect our weekly rendezvous with Jill Bevilacqua and her brainchild, The Vatican Centuries? Today you can enjoy episode 40 of her journey back in time to rediscover some of the lives and legends of the people and places that went into the making of the Vatican down the centuries. And while last week we heard how the Society of Jesus was suppressed and how Mozart visited Rome, we move on to some days of reckoning as Napoleon abducts Pius VI and wrests the Concordat from his successor. Stay tuned to this programme produced by Sean Patrick Lovett.
The dominant theme of the last quarter of the 18th century was revolt against the established order.
The impulse came from an unexpected quarter. For some time, the New World had been growing restless, and in 1775, 13 North American colonies broke away from British rule. A year later, they declared their independence, and in 1789, George Washington became the first president of the United States.
In July of that same year, the storming of the Bastille opened the floodgates of the French Revolution. The old order was overturned, and feudalism vanquished forever.
The so-called Age of Enlightenment was destined to end in violence and bloodshed. One form of tyranny was soon replaced by another. After the Reign of Terror came Napoleon Bonaparte, for over a decade, undisputed master of most of Europe.
But the ideals of liberty, equality, and fraternity had taken hold. One of the first achievements of the new century was the abolition of slavery.
The Industrial Revolution was going inexorably ahead, changing the aspect of the countryside and the lifestyle of thousands of workers.
Photography was in its beginnings, and along with the passenger railway, a more leisurely form of transport became popular, the bicycle.
In the arts, the Romantic movement was in full swing. The emotions had triumphed over reason, and free rein was given to individual expression. In poetry, Keats, Shelley, and Wordsworth. In the novel, Balzac and the inimitable Jane Austen.
In music, Schubert, Chopin, Mendelssohn, and, master of them all, Beethoven.
Turner and Constable were painting, and Goya was portraying the horrors of the Napoleonic Wars.
The Anglican Church was enjoying a spiritual revival, characterized by the Oxford movement and its brilliant protagonists Keble, Froude, and John Henry Newman. Catholics in England and Ireland had at last won their emancipation.
The successors of Peter, meanwhile, had fallen on evil days.
On the night of February 20th, 1798, a frail old man of 82 was dragged from his apartments in the Quirinal Palace and bundled unceremoniously into a carriage bound for the north.
Pius VI had been pope for close on quarter of a century. It had not been a memorable pontificate, but the French Revolution and the advent of Napoleon brought the reign of Pius VI to a dramatic end, and so saved the last pope of the 18th century from total obscurity.
When the French occupied Rome on February 15th, Pius was ordered to relinquish his temporal power. He refused. The fisherman's ring was pulled from his finger, and the old pope was carried off a prisoner. Down in the city, a brief rising was hastily put down by firing squads. Rome was in the hands of the revolutionaries.
Pius VI never returned to Rome, but died in exile in Valence on August 29, 1799. Napoleon eventually arranged for the Pope's remains to be transported to Rome, and he was buried in the Vatican grottos.
But the trials of the papacy were not over. The pontificate of Pius VII was a series of humiliations. It began with a doubtful victory when Napoleon and the Pope signed a concordat in 1801, restoring the church in France, but limiting papal influence there. 3 years later, Napoleon made himself emperor and invited Pius to perform the ceremony of coronation in Notre Dame Cathedral. The Pope accepted and made the long journey north through the midst of a kneeling people, as he put it.
But on that cold December morning, as the Pope was about to pick up the crown, Napoleon swiftly preceded him and placed it on his own head. As a further insult, the Emperor presented the Pope with a triple tiara, in which he found embedded one of the jewels which his predecessor had been obliged to give up as war tribute to Napoleon.
Worse was to come. On May the 17th, 1809, Napoleon proclaimed the Papal States part of the French Empire, while Rome itself was to be a free imperial city. On June the 10th, the papal flag was hauled down from Castel Sant'Angelo and the French tricolour hoisted in its place.
The Pope had long since prepared a bull of excommunication. Now he retaliated to Napoleon's latest affront by having the bull affixed to the doors of St. Peter's, St. Mary Major, and St. John Lateran. Napoleon's response was swift. On July the 6th, 1809, French troops broke into the Quirinal Palace and overpowered the Swiss guard. At 2 a.m, General Radé entered the Pope's apartments.
Pius was ready for him. Asked to renounce his temporal power, he retorted, "We cannot, we ought not, we will not yield or renounce that which is not ours. The temporal power belongs to the Church. We are only its administrator. The Emperor may cut us to pieces, but he will never obtain this renunciation from us."
The Pope and his Secretary of State, Cardinal Pacca, were seized forthwith, and moments later a coach was rattling away into the starry night. Despite his emotion, Pius found time to laugh when he discovered he had forgotten his spectacles in the rush.
Pius VII proved an embarrassing prisoner. He flatly refused to carry out any of the functions involved in running the church. He refused to give Napoleon a divorce from Josephine. He refused to invest any new bishops. Napoleon tried to wrest a new concordat from him, offered to restore the Papal States, but Pius was unmoved. And by this time, Napoleon was losing his hold. In the spring of 1814, he gave orders for the Pope's release.
It was a triumphant return. The Pope, who had resisted the despot, was enormously popular. He had won the respect of all by his firmness, and at the Congress of Vienna, it was decided to restore to him the Papal States. Pius died in 1823, surviving Napoleon by 2 years.
In 1821, his old adversary had died in exile on the island of St. Helena. He was 52. One of the survivors of Napoleon's Russian campaign was a Frenchman named Henri Bayle, or, as he styled himself, Stendhal. He was twice in Rome and wrote an entertaining guidebook to the city.
"This morning, when our barouche had crossed the St. Angelo Bridge, we perceived St. Peter's at the end of a narrow street. Napoleon had announced the project of marking his entry into Rome by the purchase and the demolition of all the houses that stand on the left side of this street. We followed this straight street, opened by Alexander VI, and reached the Piazza Rusticucci, on which the Pope's guard parades every day at noon with a fanfare of music and drums, but without ever being able to keep step. This square opens on the immense colonnade forming two semicircles on the right and on the left, which so effectively announce the most beautiful temple of the Christian religion. Nothing in the architecture of St. Peter's betrays effort. Everything seems naturally great. But in order to enjoy it, in order to derive a deep emotion from it, one must first of all be a believer."
You were listening there to The Vatican Centuries, written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. A big thank you to both of them. And be sure to tune in at the same time next week for episode 41. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.